What's in the news today?
With so many stories,
dozens of stories,
we're bound to miss a few.
I'm sorry, did I miss something?
It's In Case We Missed It with the Killer Bees.
And here's the stuff you missed.
All the stories we've been wanting to get to all week, but Brendan hasn't let us. How about Kanye? What is going on with Kanye?
Goodness.
Adidas has dropped him. Aaron Donald, Jaylen Brown have dropped Kanye. Everybody that has any associate, Kim dropped them a long time ago. Anybody that has any association with Kanye is dropping Kanye. Is he Antonio Brown? Is there an end game here? Is there some like method to the mat? What is going on with Kanye? I can't keep up.
I'm
going
to say this first and foremost. If you missed it, the anti-Semitic remarks that he's made is why everybody has basically put him on notice, and then companies took notice and started to bail on him. You see, his value went from $2 billion to $400 million overnight.
How is it still $400 million?
I don't know, but you know, the Adidas deal, the Gap deal was big. I think a lot of this has to do with the fact that once his mom died, he's had lyrics in songs about this as well, that he was in a massive state of depression.
Sure.
But this dude has steadily fallen off the deep end and gotten worse. This, I don't know if you come back from this. I don't know if you survive this no matter what you do, because everybody knows how you feel right now, and there's a whole lot of people that have an issue with it.
I don't want to be like, I guess, not non-sympathetic or have empathy towards depression, because I understand it's real. It's very real, and I do have a lot of empathy towards it. This seems more than that, though. This almost seems like he's doing it intentionally. Like, he's going out of his way to try to irritate people and alienate people.
It seems more like a CTE type thing or something like that. Like,
sure.
Like the minute that he took the last hit, it just completely took him off kilter.
I heard Lance say it, like maybe he got hit by Vontaze Burfict. Like Antonio Brown.
That's a good call.
I loved Kanye, and I still think, to be honest, he makes pretty good music, but I loved Kanye growing up, and I thought a lot of the stuff he did when he was like getting attention for doing dumb stuff, I thought it was marketing genius.
Right.
I no longer feel that way.
You just think he's off the rocker.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on. I don't know if there's something wrong with him or if he's just really this. I don't know what word to use.
Is this to the point of, like, R. Kelly, where you don't play his music anymore and you go off that deep end? Because the other thing I thought about, I was in the gym this morning and I saw a girl with the Yeezy slip-ons. The slides.
Yeah.
And I thought, would you, if someone walked up and asked her about, what did you see what Kanye said? Are you still wearing them? Is it that much for people to stop wearing the shoe and supporting the product?
I think there's levels to it. I think there's levels to it. Have I gone through like taking Kanye songs off my Spotify playlist? No. Am I going to purchase Kanye West tickets? Also, no.
I think people aren't giving up their Yeezy shoes and stuff like that.
I don't know. I think you're going to be judged if you're wearing Yeezy shoes. I'm not going to lie.
I thought in the gym today. That's what came to my mind.
They're pretty ugly.
Yeah, I'd never buy them in the first
Those
place.
Those slip-on things, which is like an all-rubber slipper holes in it.
I think people would be fearful of wearing those out in public because of this.
I really wore it in the gym today, I thought, someone's going to ask you something today you're not expecting.
Yeah, from Kanye to Jim Nantz. Jim Nantz calling his final four this year, which is symbolic. It is going to be played in Houston this year. I have one other thing that could make it even further symbolic for Jim Nantz calling his last Final Four, which will be in Houston. Cougs, by the way, number three in the coaches poll, which was released yesterday. Very much looking forward to the season. But a long story career for Jim Nantz. I love that he's calling his Final Four in his home.
Still doing the Masters, still doing things where he's going to be visible and relevant. But I think at a certain point, you get to a certain age where you got to kind of cut back. And I'm sure that was pretty tedious scheduling to be able to go from his NFL responsibilities to covering as many games as he does in the NCAA tournament to go right back to picking up and then doing golf on top of it. And he's probably just scaling back a little bit.
Hello, friends, is probably what the referees asked Mike Evans in the locker room. Did you see this? Where a lot of people thought that he was asking, they were asking for Mike Evans' autograph, which this is a classic case of perception is reality. And the referees have to know what that
looks
like.
Did John Boy put this out?
The referees apparently were exchanging numbers with Mike Evans because they're both from College Station. They both knew a golf pro, and Mike Evans was going to get like lessons from this golf pro. But like, okay, I understand. But referees have to know better than understanding the optics of what that looks like. And the NFL has said, hey, don't do that anymore. They've been reprimanded. They will not be suspended. It was not an autograph. Apparently, they were exchanging numbers. But you got to be smarter than that if you're the Zebras.
This goes back a long way, over a long history. There was a Derek Stafford, a referee in the NBA, that in the offseason was in Philadelphia, where Charles Barkley lived in the offseason, and they played golf. And it wasn't an issue till it was. Because suddenly when people found out, and then there was a game, you could have been any random game that Derek Stafford called that Charles Barkley played in, then questions arise. Nowadays, these questions are going to be 100 times quicker, and with social media, publicized 100 times faster. It's just, you have to be smarter than that. You can exchange cell phone numbers without handing things over and talking like that, and especially in a tunnel.
Yeah, get in a nook, get in a cranny,
right. get somewhere the cars aren't there, the buses after the game or something like that.
And there's clubbies there, man. You have equipment guys who are down there all the time that exchange messages from clubhouse to clubhouse. That's basically what they do. Not a good look by the referees. I don't care that they were just exchanging numbers. It was stupid. It was stupid to be in that, you know, perspective and seeing that scene right there in the tunnel in public view. Speaking of the Aggies, Mike Evans, a former Aggie, did you see that three Aggie freshmen suspended? Yep. There's some rumors on what was happening with these three Aggie freshmen. I don't know if they've been verified. I don't know how much stock we're giving in some reports that they were smoking a little bit of weed. I think it was
in the locker room.
I think
room?
It was before the game.
Before the game?
Before the game, which, I mean, maybe they're just trying to take the edge off. Didn't you ever watch Playmakers on ESPN? Didn't you ever see Ricky Williams at Texas? But three Aggie freshmen suspended. This is a year for Jimbo that has not been going
at
the way
all,
that he
man.
Thought.
I mean, you look at it, and then the previous suspensions before the Miami game, two of the kids involved in that were involved in this. All three kids that were suspended for the rest of the season were part of this 2022 or 2021-22 recruiting class that put them on top of everybody else. Now you're taking all three of those off. You got to believe all three of those guys will be looking to play elsewhere next season. And again, on top of everything else that you mentioned with not getting the wins and the way Jimbo's coached and the fact that he's due about $89 million that's guaranteed if they try and get rid of him,
yeah.
It's a really, really bad look for A&M. And the bigger question is going to be, how do you bounce back from this?
I think you can question that extension when it happened, too. And I've asked some of my Aggie friends, too, like, why the extension? And they were like, well, you know, A&M has tons of money. Like, there's not a dollar figure that's too high. You might as well pay him the money now. It's the price of doing business in the SEC. We have all this money that we can still buy him out, and it's not going to be significant to us anyways. I pressed him on that again the other day. I said, well, what about now? He goes, well, I didn't think it was going to be this soon. I didn't think it was going to be this soon.
No one did, but I was with you when he signed it. Like, why? You still had multiple years left on the initial 10-year deal. Why do you feel like you have to? If you are truly A&M, if you are truly a destination for coaches, why would you be so concerned to lock this guy up later in his career and not be confident that whoever, if he left, whoever you wanted, you could go get?
I think Kevin Sumlin now, they've been like even, like X amount of games so far in their career as head coaches of Texas A&M. I think Kevin Sumlin now has a one-game lead on Jimbo Fisher.
How about that?
This many games in. Jimbo Fisher, low-key, kind of ruined that Florida State program too, by the way. Did not leave Florida State in a great place.
And a part of it, and I've talked to Florida State alums who've told me the same, Jimbo was very dedicated to, but he wanted to stay competitive with the Oklahomas and the Alabamas and things like that, because it's a state-run school. Florida State wasn't willing to give them the money for the facilities and the things that would allow him to stay competitive.
Yep.
So on the flip side, and also he always wanted to take care of his staff, he started on the way out to not care a whole lot instead of being that passionate guy that wanted everything. And the writing was on the wall, but he did a lot of damage before he got out.
I have heard their facilities are pretty subpar.
Yes, they are.
Compared to the Blue Bloods that are out there in college football. I hate to bring this up. Maybe I don't. How about over this weekend, Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady both lose. Not so much that they both lost, though, but who they lost to. Yeah. They lost to Heineken and P.J. Walker, former Houston Roughneck great.
Well, and you look at the fact that Brady has lost to the Steelers and to the Panthers, and over a three-game span, not that the Jets are anything to sneeze at now based on what their record still is, but you lost to the Jets at home. You lost to the Giants in London. You struggled with the Patriots with a third-string quarterback, and now you lose to a team on their second-string quarterback in Heineke. There's so many issues with both of these teams. And of the two, at least Aaron Rodgers is defending his team and coming out swinging and saying, we can turn this thing around. Brady sounds defeated. I think this divorce has taken so much more of a toll than he's willing to admit. And I think for the first time in the career of Tom Brady, he's basically done with football, or just there's bigger priorities and he's basically getting disinterested with football.
The you know, I don't like to pat myself on the back. Remember in the preseason, I was saying that, you know, this Tom Brady thing, him being gone for a couple weeks, these divorce rumors, the offensive line questions, not necessarily buying Tampa Bay. Here's the Tampa Bay saving grace, though. The NFC South is abysmal.
Not like, one team has a winning record.
Right. We were joking early in the year about the AFC South champion finishing below 500. Now, Tennessee's been on a little bit of a roll. They're coming into Houston with what I think is a four-game winning streak. NFC South champion? I think we'll finish under 500. Yeah,
very, very possible. And it's a very bad look, but he has a better chance than Aaron Rodgers, looking at a division where the Vikings are rolling and they haven't slowed down. And with every misstep by the Packers, it's another game up in a division that might not be able to be won. And now you're just trying to salvage a wild card if you're Green Bay. That's not how you saw the season playing out. That's why Brandon Cooks would make so much sense for them. That's why OBJ, they might overpay. That's why they're going to go try to find two veteran receivers as quick as they can, because their two rookies they drafted, that all this potential, they can't catch the football.
I hate patting myself on the back, but remember who drafted the Green Bay Packers with their number one pick in the Killer B NFL draft? Yours truly, Branham, did. Sam Ellinger, the new quarterback for the Colts. We're back. Apparently Jim Irsay was behind this decision. We talk about meddling owners quite often. What are your thoughts on the owner of the Colts making the quarterback decision in Indy?
If that's Jim's decision, I hope Jim also had a conversation with GM Chris Ballard and said, this is no reflection on you, and your job is safe no matter what we do. Because when an owner does this and basically castrates his general manager, who's trying, as well as he's done a phenomenal job of constructing the rest of the roster, as we talked about earlier this week, the one missing piece has been quarterback, and he has been swinging and missing all over the place. If he doesn't even get a chance to see his latest swing miss for a full season, I don't know what this says about Ballard and his power, and if he wants to be there or if he will be there going forward.
I don't think it's a good thing for Ballard or Frank Reich. Whenever Irsay's making the quarterback decisions there. 713-780-ESPN. I heard some manager, Philly manager Rob Thompson. He was on some Philly radio earlier. Actually, it was yesterday. A few things that he said that caught my attention about the Astros opponent in the World Series. We were just talking about Jim Irsay, though, and I bet you Jim Irsay would love a little bit of Gentle Ben. I think we can all agree on that. Whether it's the vodka, Irsay would like that. The gin, he would like that. The bourbon, I know he would like that. I like them all. They're all part of the rotation for me, and Gentle Ben Spirits does it better than anybody else. They have this state-of-the-art, innovative Percedo craft technology that makes them better in purity. It makes them better in aroma, and it makes them better in taste than your favorite brand of vodka, gin, or bourbon. Purification of Gentle Ben is unrivaled. You'll love what's not in it. Try a sip of Gentle Ben, compare it to your brand. You're going to taste that huge difference that I did when Ricky Ford, owner of Gentle Ben Spirits, A&M class of 85, by the way. Look for him, by the way, this weekend if you're heading out to Aggie Park, southeast side of Kyle Field. Ricky will be there handing out some free samplings of that's very good Gentle Ben. But Ricky had me out to the tasting room in Alvin to see what I thought, and ever since then I've been a Gentle Ben man. If you stop by his Aggie tailgate, so will you. It is smooth, it is clean, it eliminates the burn. Enjoy your drink. Don't work through your drink. You can find Gentle Ben Vodka and Gin at Total Wine. You can find it at Specs. You can also go online, order it there at gentleben.com. If you're in League City, stop by Hills Liquor on South Shore. They have it there as well. Are you going to a Rockets home game? Stop by the Gentle Ben Bar on the main concourse inside the Toyota Center and try it there as well. How about if you're looking for a place to host a private party, a place to host a private event? There's not a better place to do that than the tasting room in Alvin. It's the perfect spot because it's a great little facility, and it's also got all of those great spirits there. Vodka, gin, bourbon. Enjoy some really good cocktails as you're enjoying that private party or event. Sit back with good company and raise a glass of the very best Gentle Ben.
Talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, sports in Houston on Saturday are going to be fantastic. Game 2 of the World Series that night, but what better way than kicking off your morning on Saturday with a little Houston Cougar football. U of H taking on USF this homecoming weekend. Brendan doesn't have any help over there. So we'll go caller number three. Clayton Tuneware is number three. Caller number three to 713-780-3776 wins a pair of tickets to the U of H game on Saturday against USF for a homecoming. Family four packs, if you're not a lucky winner, take advantage of a couple of ticket options that are both fantastic. If you have a family, you're looking for something to do Saturday morning, early afternoon, ahead of the World Series on Saturday, take advantage of this family four pack. Four tickets. Four hot dogs, four chips, four sodas for all under $100. You can get all that for just $96. You don't have a family? No problem. They got another deal for you. Visit uhcougars.com. Give them a call at 713-GO-COUGS. They'll send you $15 individual tickets. Can't beat that. Individual tickets at $15 and the family four-pack for $96. To take advantage of that, call 713-GO-COUGS. Say, hook me up with the four-pack that Brandon was talking about, or you can do it online, uhcougars.com/promo. Enter promo code USF four-pack, Houston USF, Saturday, 11 o'clock kick at TDECU Stadium. All right, I listened to Rob Thompson a little bit today on 94 WIP in Philadelphia. The Philadelphia Phillies manager, who's done a really good job with this team. Yep. After Joe Girardi was fired, they made him the interim manager. I don't know if they've taken the interim tag off of him just
yet.
Did they do it officially?
Deal. Yeah, they gave him like a two-year deal, I think.
We knew it was coming. I just wasn't sure if the paperwork and the housekeeping had been done. He certainly deserves it. He's turned this team around. They went from being a sub-500 team, disappointing. Everybody in Philly was mad. They were booing their players, and now they have this team of destiny look about them to where now they're playing in the World Series against the Houston Astros. A few things that he said that kind of caught my attention here. One of them really speaks to this whole destiny talk. As you can tell, I'm annoyed by all this destiny talk.
Love it.
But he talked about the hunger of the city. And Philadelphia is a rabid sports town. Like, they're really, really happy or they're really, really mad, and usually there's no in-between. But he talked about the hunger of the city, talked about the hunger at a team being at an all-time high. This is what we were talking about earlier. A lot of times when you're at that all-time high and you're riding this wave of momentum, and then you allow yourself to rest for a little bit of time, in this particular instance, 4 days between end of LCS and World Series, a lot of times, Blankers, it's very tough to regain that wave of momentum that you were riding.
No, it really is. And that's the thing that I've said all along was, as much as I hate no baseball, nothing to watch, and it's hard to stay engaged and count the days until you see baseball again, I think of the two teams, this really was a negative for the Phillies, because you want to play every day when you're playing your best. You want to capitalize on the momentum. You want to ride the wave. You want Big Mo to keep sitting on your bench and give you all the momentum in every situation so that you can continue to roll. That roll has been put on pause. And when you pause the roll, when you come back to play, a lot of times you're not the barrel rolling downhill anymore. Now you're trying to rebuild and regain the type of momentum you had previously, and it's not as easy to do. And so it's an advantage for the Astros. I understand what he's saying from a Philly perspective. Look, I think the whole city is rabid because they didn't expect this, because it's been so long since 09 to be there. And to not have it be their year in so many ways during the regular season, you fire a manager, Harper was injured twice, et cetera, et cetera. To be there now, I'm sure they are going to, the fan, it's not going to be a fan problem. It's going to be just where the hitters are and how they can pick up where they left off, which I don't think is going to be easy.
No, I don't think it's going to be easy for them as well, especially whenever you go up against Justin Verlander. You're hoping you're getting Cy V and not former playoff JV. He also kind of hinted who he's going to use in game one. And this was something that we talked about maybe even Monday. I can't remember. Wheeler pitched the final game of the NLCS. He pitched in that fifth game. And look, he's been really good for the Phillies. I have read on him how they've noticed that he starts to labor a little bit more recently, like after 80 pitches. So I was thinking that they're going to give him the extra day and just flip-flop Nola and Wheeler at the top of the rotation. Rob Thompson basically said that they're going to use Nola as their game one starter. They said they'll make it official later when they're meeting with the media. But it looks like Nola's going to be the game one starter. Wheeler's the game two starter. Not really sure it matters a ton, because Nola and Wheeler, in terms of productivity, like, they get their outs differently. Nola pitches to soft contact. Wheeler punches a lot of guys out. I think in terms of caliber, tiers, that sort of thing, that they're basically on the same caliber, same tier.
Well, and Nola was the guy that shut down the Astros when he pitched against them late in the season, if you do want to take something away from that final series. So I had said all along, I thought Nola was the guy that he would go to in game one, And our resident Philly fan here, Greg, on the network side, just was in complete disbelief that that shouldn't and couldn't happen. And now here we are having this discussion, because I think that a lot like when you think about how the Astros handle Verlander, you want to border on the case of giving too much rest, not enough.
Yeah.
And if you know that Wheeler has had a little bit of a bugaboo trying to get over that 80-pitch mark, and you know this is the most important series of the year, you might as well give him the extra day's rest. And then take your chances later in the series, seeing how it plays out and how you want to use him again.
Yep.
But I think this is the smart move by Philadelphia if they do indeed have any kind of issues, worries, or concerns about Wheeler.
Yeah, Greg just seemed to be pretty upset about it, actually. He thought that they should have went Wheeler. Not only did he think that they would, he thought that they should go Wheeler
and he's more so thinking about, like, Game 7 and his availability and having at least some kind of rest for his arm.
See, I don't think that there's much difference between Games 1 and Game 2, because you're starting twice in the series, either Game 1, Game 5, or Game 2, Game 6. I am not a huge fan of a dude starting Game 5, one day rest, now he's back on the mound trying to get an inning in a World Series game after one day's rest. Now, Philly's case might be a little bit different because their bullpen is it's top heavy. They got some really good arms in the back end of their bullpen, but it's not as deep as the Astros. So maybe Philly would be more inclined to go, Wheeler, one day rest, we need you for an inning in the sixth inning in a potential Game 7. Whereas I'm the Astros, I'm not pitching Verlander on one day rest ahead of anybody in the bullpen.
It's all hands on deck for them, because the biggest advantage in this entire series is within the pitching. And yes, after their top two starters, who are all world and can compete with just about any team in the league's 1-2s, it's a fall off after that. And when you get to the bullpen, you know, it is, again, David Robertson's a guy that's been there, done that. He's also older and done it for a long time. You don't know exactly what you're going to get every time out against those type of guys, as opposed to the depth and the abilities of the Astros starters and their relief pitchers. So that is the biggest advantage that they have, where you don't have to worry about it nearly as much as a team like Philly. That's why they're hyper-analyzing this. But overall, looking at the series too, I mean, it's the same way that we have the concerns we have about who they're going to go with in games 3 and 4. I don't know that from an Astros perspective, you have to obviously consider it, but I think you're on the attack mode of thinking if it goes 6 or 7. Uh-huh. I think that you are in a position of thinking, look, we are going to be on attack mode, but the biggest thing is that you've got to set the tone early. When we always say, what's the best scenario for the Astros? You come in game 1, Verlander is dealing, and you put up a crooked number and say, this ain't the National League playoffs anymore. You're dealing with a team right now that is going to, you know, really look to throw a knockout punch.
Yeah, best case scenario, you win first 4 games, and then you don't have to worry about
anything.
Well,
that would be pretty easy.
Looking at this team, though, you alluded to some of this, because I think that their starting rotation and their bullpen for the Phillies is almost kind of the same story, where the top half of it, really, really good. Yep. The bottom half of it, you wonder. From the bullpen point of view, you mentioned Robertson, the Sir Anthony Brad Dominguez Hand guy is really good. Alvarado's their best lefty. Brad Hand's their best lefty.
Brad Hand is like a Robertson. Been there, done that, done it for a long time, but not nearly who they used to be.
And then their starting rotation, we mentioned the top two. Nola and Wheeler are the real deal. Like they're both really, really good. They're also reverse splits guys, if you're thinking about making some sort of a World Series MVP vote. After that, like, Ranger Suarez is probably their number 3. He got lit up by the Astros in the series that they played in Houston, by the way. And they don't really have a true number 4. Like, they've used Falter there a little bit. He faltered in the Padres series. They've used Syndergaard a little bit. He hasn't really been very good. Now, their lineup is better than any lineup that the Astros have faced in this playoff. Yep. Better than Seattle's, it's deeper. It's better than the Yankees, because the Yankees had Aaron Judge, and really that was it. Philly, they have 9 dudes that you really have to respect. Yep. Brandon Marsh is probably their weakest offensive player, but even Brandon Marsh, who they traded with the Angels to get him back at the deadline, he's hitting .288 since the trade to Philly. What's interesting about their lineup, the top half, Schwarber, Hoskins, Realmuto, Harper, Castellanos, they're not necessarily like high average guys. Realmuto probably the best. Harper really good too. But they get on base, they walk, they hit tons of home runs.
I was going to say the pop is the biggest issue.
The bottom half, Bohm, Stott, Segura, Marsh, they're more contact, don't hit for very much power at all. So, like, from a pitching perspective for the Astros, it's kind of similar to the Yankee series. This is going to be a lineup that's going to hit a lot of home runs. They're going to hit a good amount of home runs. The thing is, from an Astros pitching perspective, no walks. Don't allow the solo home run to Bryce Harper be a 2-run homer, because you walked Realmuto right before Bryce Harper was coming up.
Yeah, look, I think in looking at this series too and trying to hyper-analyze it, I think Noah Syndergaard's a guy, when you mention him, from a Philly perspective, I think he sees the mound at some point for some significant time, simply because he pushed early in the season. If you remember, the first Verlander start, Noah Syndergaard pitched for Anaheim, pitched pretty well against the Astros. And I granted it was early in the year,
yeah.
But there's a guy that they might believe, hey, has seen this lineup, knows how to pitch to him. From a lineup perspective, I mean, that's why I said all along, you got to give him all the respect in the world. You don't know if they're going to be hot anymore, but you know, like a Gene Segura is a 300 career hitter that's a contact hitter that does a lot of good things by putting the ball in play. And Baum was a guy that got off to a slow start, didn't get off on the best foot with Philly fans, found a way to kind of resurrect himself with them and with the way he plays baseball, and realizes in a lineup that has that much power up in the start of the lineup, all he's got to do is just stay within himself and be steady, and he could be a contributor. Castellanos is an interesting story because he was a guy that was sought after that in free agency. He's a guy they went out and got. He has kind of underperformed as a whole. But I think as he fits into this lineup, he too is a guy that doesn't have to do what was expected of him in free agency. He just has to fit in and be one of the dudes that helps the guys that have been getting it done, like Schwarber and like Bryce Harper.
He's kind of been a microcosm of the Philly season. Not a great regular season, but has been pretty hot in the postseason. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. What are the craziest things you've done because of superstition in sport? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, tell you about the good people at Fitz Roofing. Look, Corey is the president of the company, and he is also the vice president of the Houston Roofing Association. That tells you all you need to know, because not only is it about his company, but his peers respect him enough to give him the vice president of the Houston Roofing Association, because they know he knows his stuff and he can be trusted. From a Fitz Roofing perspective, as it relates to you, this is in the middle of hurricane season. You know you're going to need help. You know that you want to make sure your roof is tip-top and everything that goes with it so you can save the contents of your house and not have to deal with a major catastrophe. The best way to do that, call Fitz. They come to you and they can tell you what they can do and where your roof stands without costing you a single cent. It's a free, no-obligation inspection that very few companies offer, and no one is better at doing their job than Fitz, so you go to them. 832-521-3001. They come to you. They tell you the state of your roof. They can tell you how they can help. They can tell you how what needs to be done before any kind of bad weather really hits and what the consequences could be if you don't get it. And then they'll go on with the rest of their day. If you want them to do any kind of work or make any kind of upgrades to your house, your commercial establishment, or your business, just call them back. They'll take care of the rest, and they'll make sure before, during, and after the sale, no one does it better. Best warranties in the business, the best products in the business, starting with CertainTeed shingles, and the best ratings in the business, too. Check out all their services, FITZRoofing.com. It's Fitz Roofing, making a difference one home at a time.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What is the craziest thing you've done because you're superstitious when it comes to sports? 713-780-ESPN, our HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Lance walked into our little bullpen, we call it, where we host, we talk about the show, pre-show, production meeting, all of that stuff. I guess we do host it there, and everybody's invited. But you guys were talking about the superstitions that you have in sports. Lance says, like, certain places he stands, where he's sitting, where he's watching the game. What are your craziest superstitions when it comes to sports?
Craziest? Well, it's one that all my friends that are Packer fans know, and that if they've watched any games ever with me, they realize that for a long time it was that whenever the Packers were faltering in any way, shape, or form, that I would change what I was wearing. I would change my sweatshirt or a jersey or whatever it was in my hat and everything else. And my relatives have actually picked up on this to where I still do it. Like, if they're playing bad and it's a commercial break, and when my mother-in-law was in town, she's like, where's he going? And Lisa's like, oh, he's probably going to get a few other hats and other things because, I literally will have these people that I knew and some of them I used to work with. They're now all across the country in different jobs. They'll text me going, you did change the sweatshirt already, right? You did do something, right? Because they all started to buy in and believe that it could make a difference. And it was just a superstition that we did. And from an Astros perspective, I'm still like that. Like, the whole house is quiet. Everybody's in bed. And like, for when the Astros are hitting, I sit in the same spot on the couch. When the relief pitchers are in, especially, I am either pacing or I'm between my living room and my kitchen. I can't sit. I have to stand. I do all these different things because whether it works or not or has any impact, I get it. It's just how I watch games.
I'm I don't think I'm as extreme as you. There are certain things I do. I don't like to consider myself superstitious, but there are some elements of superstition that I will do. Maybe just a little stitious, as Michael Scott would say. 713-780-ESPN. What are your superstitions? 713-780-3776. I mentioned to you guys that Branham Baby was in the same spot whenever Yordan Alvarez hit the walk-off home run in Game 1 of the ALDS and then hit the go-ahead home run in Game 2 of the ALDS against Luis Castillo. So I would be lying to you if I said that I didn't put Branham Baby in the same spot that Yordan hit the first two home runs in during that 18-inning marathon. Now, it didn't work, but we tried to move Branham Baby to a certain spot so Yordan could try to come through for the third day in a row. Didn't work. Sometimes I will wear the same clothes that I've worn for a previous win. Now, I'll wash them. Right. Like, I'm not going to just wear something dirty over and over and over again. But whenever U of H had the run to the Final Four a couple of years ago, I wore the same thing for every NCAA tournament game.
Craig and I would do the same thing during Rockets runs.
Yeah.
It goes back. And I always want to say I'm not superstitious like you, but my dad got me on this kick where my dad was always big on superstitions. Like, new shoes should never be on a table. And even when the kids, if Lisa just takes their new shoes, and I'm like, no, just don't do that. Not feeling that. And like when my senior year in college, I had won like five or six games in a row, and I did not wash my baseball sleeves or my socks.
Your jock?
No, not the jock.
You washed that. Okay,
it was
good.
The socks and the you know, the wool sleeved Mizuno tops, they used to call them. And I'm sure the guys on the lockers on either side of me were hoping for a loss in some strange way, but I've always been known to be a little bit more on that side.
A little stitious.
I couldn't really think of a ton for me. I mean, I'm pretty big on the won't get up when things are going well, like for anything. But aside from that, I couldn't think of a whole lot. But you know what we couldn't do this segment without mentioning?
Mm. Oh, yeah.
That's true.
This is more of a vibe than a superstition.
But we created it for so many players. Think about the run Fromber went on when we got a theme song for him. Think about how many guys we turned around. Even Odorizzi for a short period of time heard the Eminem and decided that he better step up.
You can argue Garcia wasn't a superstition, but I think Odorizzi very clearly was. Fromber tweets. From Not Santa, every single Odorizzi start that I needed to play the music somewhere. And if it was a weekend, I needed to play it like on my own phone.
But remember the Fromber one I picked because he was such a roller coaster and you didn't know which one he was going to get. Once we started playing the song, he had, 25 straight good starts where you're like, you know what? Well, we can want to believe it. We can.
Lamont might have the worst superstition I've ever heard. He said, during the Astros playoffs, I don't watch the game. I follow
I
on
read
Twitter.
That.
Oh,
I could never. I could never do that.
I couldn't be a fan of a sport if I couldn't watch my team play their playoffs.
You can't even be superstitious about your superstition team because you're not even watching them play.
Like, as much as I question sometimes why I stress as much as I do and why I beat myself up watching these games with, you know, as much stress as I have, the alternative of not watching it and trying to figure out after the fact or at some point what's going on with it, no thank you.
Yeah, 713-780-ESPN. What are your superstitions when it comes to sports? Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Kate, what is your superstition in sports? You're in the Hive with the Killer Bees.
Hey, guys. So my superstition, especially when it comes to the Astros, is that when things get a little tight and hairy in situations, I have to turn off the TV.
Oh,
and that's only a playoff situation, but it's like, I cannot watch it. Like, back in the World Series, I remember in high school.
Oh, we lost Kate. Kate, that's too bad. It was a good call. So
I wonder when she knows to turn it back on.
I can't go to that extreme. Like, there's times like late in playoff games when my wife's like, this really isn't good for your health. I'm like, yeah, you're probably right. But there's zero chance I'm not going to know what happened.
Right. I'm not walking away from the screen.
No. And I'll avoid Twitter, too. Because, like, we have Hulu, and Hulu's probably like 30, 45 seconds behind, like, DirecTV or whatever. So a lot of times, like, or even you have, like, McTaggart or whatever out at the games, and they'll, like, live play-by-play.
Right.
So they'll post it. So, like, you have it spoiled. I can't have it spoiled. I'll only check Twitter in between innings.
Well, and you think about, too, that's probably the reason why I move around in the room and do the things that I do. I can't completely turn it off or walk away from it, so I try and see if I can change it.
Corey says basically the same shirt until the team loses, then I switch to a different one. I think that that's probably common. Now, you have to wash the shirt, at least to be nice to people around you.
I've never once done the same shirt thing.
Really?
Never.
Really? Mm.
So you do nothing, it
And by the
like.
Way, Lance Zierlein is also hyper superstitious, so let's just make sure that's clear.
I think the closest thing is I won't get up if things are going well. I will sit there until I have a reason to move. In the game, I mean. Not a reason in real life.
713-780-3776. Back out to the HRMP listener line. Ryan, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's your superstition?
What's going on, fellas? So during the last Yankees series last week, I drank the same booze, which was Crawford Bach and Tito's.
And Gentle Ben, I'm sure. Church. I'm sure you meant Gentle Ben. He meant Gentle Ben.
He just hung up on
it. Ryan meant Gentle Ben. It wasn't the other thing he was talking about. It was Gentle Ben. Ryan, though, in all sincerity, try Gentle Ben. You'll like it than your favorite brand of vodka. 713-780-ESPN. Back out to the HRMP listener line. Will, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's your superstition?
During two strikes, two balls, two outs, I always take my hat off and shake it in front of me.
Okay. Usually a lot of people will do the two finger on the side of their hat and then rub their hat back and forth. You ever seen that? Deuces are wild, two balls, two strikes, two outs. You see this
a
lot.
Not.
You haven't seen that?
I have not.
They do this all the time when there's two balls, two strikes, two outs. They'll rub the side of the hat. Shaking the hat in front of them. I haven't heard that one. Now, there's a lot of superstition in baseball. Like, you don't get some hits, sometimes you take the bat into the hot tub with you. Lots of superstitions in baseball.
Never heard that one.
Brendan's over there shaking his head. You're trying to get it hot.
I've definitely heard, plenty.
Oh.
Even just not stepping over the line.
I remember
in baseball, right?
Covering the press conference in the playoffs in 19, and Springer came to the podium with his bat and was taking it home, and someone made the kind of off, just off the mic, you get to sleep with that thing? And he goes, I might. and baseball players are very much like that.
ABC Eric, depending on which kid is on my lap and what happens during the Astro game, decides who gets to sit where the next game. 3-9-4-1, when it's late in the game or a high-pressure situation, I mute the TV. I got to hear, too. I got to see
too.
And hear what's going on.
I am
couldn't
the guy,
do the mute.
Though, that I'll say this, too, as it relates to even, if like you said with Twitter, if friends of mine are like texting, and by the way, everybody that's truly a friend of mine, not an acquaintance, knows, don't bother me. Do not text me during Packer games. And those that do get a very harsh warning. But like with the Astros games, if my buddy has been texting me, one of my buddies, and the Astros are doing well, I'll allow it. But in a clutch moment, especially if things kind of changed a little bit, I hear it or I know that I'm getting messages. I'm not going to that phone till that particular situation is over with. And I will evaluate accordingly on how they came out of it.
R. Chum says, I feel like the manager in Moneyball. I think he meant the GM. If I start watching, it seems like things are going bad. And when I stop, things improve. So I follow the stats from a sports app. I think that was Billy Bean, actually. 713-780-ESPN. What's the craziest thing you've done because of superstition in sports? We'll ask a Wheelhouse member that. We'll also ask them, what is the least you would trade Brandon Cooks for? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Saturday in Houston's going to be fantastic from a sports perspective. Also, the weather's going to be very good. World Series Saturday night, but how about Saturday morning, early afternoon? Why don't you head over to TDECU Stadium, Houston, USF. It is homecoming at TDECU. All roads lead home. Come home to TDECU as the Cougars very much in the American Conference race, looking for their third straight win as they host the Bulls of USF. Going to be a fun day at the stadium, of course, with a very special halftime performance. As always, the great spirit of Houston, but also the presentation of the homecoming court. During the game, entertainment by the cheerleaders, Cougar Doll, Shasta and Sasha, and DJ Yobi Yobes mixing up in the student section. And of course, the product on the field, again, looking for their third straight win. Get there early for all the tailgating, which begins at 8 a.m. Cougar Walk at 8:45. What better way to get your Saturday started? Tickets started only $15, too, while supplies last. UHCougars.com, 713-GO-COUGS. Or maybe you want to take advantage of this family four-pack plan. Four tickets, four hot dogs, four chips, four sodas for less than $100. You get all of that for just $96. Go to UHCougars.com/promo, enter promo code USF 4-pack, or call 713-GO-COUGS and said, give me this 4-pack that Branham's talking about. Don't miss all the fun and pageantry of college football. Come early, be loud, and wear red.
All teams covered. No talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
We're talking about the craziest things you've done for superstitions in sports. Blankers will move around a lot. I put Branham baby in certain spots.
I changed jerseys for, or
changed jerseys.
Hats and shirts for Packers.
I wore the same wardrobe for every game of the NCAA tournament when Houston went to the Final Four a couple of years ago, which I think we're going to have Kelvin Sampson on in the next couple of days. Their season starts really soon. Pip on Twitter saying that his superstition is that he doesn't tell everybody else what his superstition is. Does that count as a superstition?
No.
I don't think
that's
so.
That's a dirty little secret.
5516, I don't look at any social media. Also, if I start watching the game on the phone, I try to do everything the same way all series. Doesn't matter if I'm home or not. See, I'm not watching the game on a phone over the TV, no matter how many games in a row the Astros are winning.
Brett Keller joining us from the Wheelhouse, and I'm sure he's got plenty because he's got plenty of teams that are his teams, like Kansas and Texas and the Cowboys and the Rangers and... Did I miss any?
I feel like that you missed about 10.
Okay, I was going to say, I didn't know where I should stop.
Yeah.
Any superstitious things that go along with those teams?
I'm getting better with age. I'm trying to tell myself that
just
what
on,
I do,
like, your superstitions.
A lot of things.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. And as good as I'm going to get, but I'm glad you're holding out. Yeah. No, at the Final Four in New Orleans this year for Kansas, like for the national championship game, I had really good seats. Now, I bought $15 seats that were up near the roof at the Superdome, but I was able to sneak down before tip-off and had lower bowl seats, and Kansas was getting worked in the first half of that game. So I moved around three different times, and then finally at halftime, KU's down like 15, and I'm like, you know what? Let's try some sports karma here. Let's go sit in my actual seats. Let's go sit where I paid to sit, even though it's like five rows up from the top of the Superdome, and I can't see anything that's happening on the floor. And sure enough, Kansas comes back and wins it all. So if anyone asked why KU had that comeback, it wasn't because of David McCormick. It wasn't because of Ochai Agbaji. None of the players, none of the coaches. It was because I moved and sat in my proper seat.
Savvy sports pandemonium.
Mm-hmm. So like now I'm at the point, I used to do this when I was at home. Like I heard you talking about it, Joel, where you would just change shirts or change hats. I would do that more. Now I'm more when I'm at the game is when I do a whole lot. Like I've gotten, I don't know if better's the right word, but I try to do less at home and try to tell myself that what I do doesn't matter. But when I'm in the building, I feel like I have sway. I feel like I have impact on what's going on the field or on the court.
Bill Self sends you a thank you card. When they hang the national championship banner inside of Allen Fieldhouse, they should be chanting Rock Chalk Jayhawk to you when they have you inside of Allen Fieldhouse.
They probably will.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm getting a ring.
Whatever you've done for the Longhorns, you need to do more or change it all.
Yeah, I've given up hope on Texas football, man. Like there's no superstition in the world that can fix them.
Where do you stand on the Sark not standing for the Eyes of Texas?
He apologized for it. The whole Eyes of Texas thing is overblown. I was doing radio in Austin a couple of years ago when all that stuff came out, and it was a big deal. And it's just not that big of a deal to me.
There's a lot of tradition and honor to being there for the alma mater. Like, that's everywhere. Like, that's everywhere.
It's the one thing where coaches, it is required, whether it's written or not, like, you know how much you, as a coach, do your post-game interview and get hightail your rear end to wherever your fan base is and do what you are supposed to do and you're expected to do, or it's your ass.
Yeah, that was part of the reason why Tom Herman lost his job in Austin.
He didn't stand for it either?
No, remember, not as big of a deal down here as it was
Kisses
in Austin.
Kisses weren't as wet?
After the Oklahoma game, they lost, and he and his team left the field, and then there was a moment the offseason, I think before the COVID year, where some of the players realized or found out about the origins of the Eyes of Texas, and Tom Herman didn't handle that super well, and some of the guys in the locker room turned against him, and then some of the stakeholders, some of the boosters turned against him. So, yeah, to your point, Joel, the alma mater stuff is very important. To me, not a big deal. To some, a mess.
You better sing the song and sway the sway and know the words and do all of that if you're going to get the boosters to stay on your side.
Hey, for me, it's win the damn game.
True.
You can flip me the bird during the Eyes of Texas if you're winning championships.
That's not going to go over well with a guy making a whole lot of money.
No, but it's good with me.
I know a lot of coaches that will practice the lyrics of the alma mater before you play a game that season. That's how serious some people take it.
Yes. Yeah. Some people just try to adopt the accent as soon as possible of a Cajun accent and go to LSU.
More coaches should try that. Yeah.
He's doing all right, by the way. Yeah. What's AC's biggest superstition, do you think? Instead of boiling the chicken, a little blackened chicken maybe, if he has a wild hair from time to time?
You know,
he shaves all wild hairs. I mean, I think that's part of – but when he's not oiling up, he's shaving whatever he can to be as – fit as possible.
You've seen this?
No, I just can only imagine based on his diet.
You can vouch.
And the fact
test.
That he can barely sit down without thinking of a commode today because he's still a little ill.
Yeah.
I didn't know that was the genesis of the illness.
I think
there's many genesis of the illness.
But for
he's been
AC.
Dealing with a lot, yeah.
Really? Well, he's trooping it out. He's a gamer. He's here today. Brandon Cooks looks like he's quit on the Texans. Didn't do his media availability today because he was getting a lift in. A little time management there a little bit. Brandon Cooks, he's been liking things on Twitter suggesting that his name is on the move, that he could be involved in a trade before next Tuesday's trade deadline in the NFL. I saw some things early in the year that I didn't love about Brandon Cooks leaving the field while a ball was intercepted and the other team was running it back the other way and walked off the field while the play was still going on after shrugging his arms into the air. He hasn't been playing very well either. He's had a pretty disappointing season, dropping passes, things like that. His contract is not great to make him attainable by another team. What is the least you would take for Brandon Cooks?
A fourth?
I think it's going to be hard to do.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be hard to get a fourth for Brandon Cooks.
It might be. I mean, there are people talking about getting a second for Cooks, and there's no way in hell that's happening right now. Some people are like,
we started there and then talked to Lance and found between the dead cap and the extension that Caserio signed him to, it is not even in the realm of possibilities to get more than a fourth.
Yeah, if you traded him last year at the deadline, you could have gotten a second,
yep,
which is what you traded to go get him a couple of years ago. But at this point, yeah, I mean, a fourth, if it's less than that, that's fine. He hasn't played well this year, a couple of crucial drops. He took a personal day after the bye. Like, you talked about some of the other instances.
That's true.
Of
that's
Cooks
right.
Not showing up, but he had a day off of practice last week after the bye week. And
he was mourning the firing of Jack Easterby.
Well, yeah, that's another reason why I'm almost like, just cut him. Anybody who supports Easterby can leave. I don't care. I just trade him for nothing. That guy's got no taste. He don't know what he's doing. If he's
Roby,
a fan of
you had who's the linebacker. Everybody that's basically, Zach Cunningham. Everybody that's basically pushed back against the culture has been pushed out.
Mm-hmm.
Let him be the next one to go. But the ramifications are a lot more severe than the other two guys.
No doubt about that. And I get why Cooks is an Easterby guy. I mean, Easterby traded for him. You could argue that was the best thing that Easterby did while he was running this team, and it was a market value trade that he made to get Cooks. It's not like it was a fleecing or anything. So I get why Cooks likes Easterby more than most. But, yeah, if he's checked out or with the way this team is and where they are right now in their rebuild, you don't need him. He doesn't have any long-term purpose here.
I've talked myself into a sixth being the least that I would take for Easterby, for Cooks. I would take far less for Easterby. But even if it is a fourth, which I think might even be on the high end of this scale where Brandon Cooks eventually goes, you mentioned the second rounder that he could have gotten for Cooks last year. I think you have to look at Nick Caserio in this as well, because not only did he not trade him for a second, if it is indeed a fourth, he's losing two rounds of value by doing it at the wrong time. And then you also compound the fact that he gave him this extension, which is going to make him more difficult to trade. I think you could look at Nick Caserio. We always have a very watchful eye on what Casario's doing, pass-fail on this trade, pass-fail on this draft pick, pass-fail on this contract negotiation. I believe that Nick Caserio has already lost this trade or the Brandon Cook situation before the trade's even been made.
Yeah, it sure feels that way. Now, my answer to that and my thoughts on that would be different if Cooks was playing well. Like, if Cooks and Mills had the same chemistry they had last year, I would have been like, yeah, it's worth keeping Brandon Cooks
around.
They do.
I didn't throw it well. You didn't catch it well.
Yeah.
That's chemistry.
That's where they're at right now. Like, if it was the same as towards the end of last season when those two were seemingly in cahoots all of the time, then it'd be like, all right, like, you want this guy to give Davis Mills a chance. And, hey, even if Mills sucks with everybody else, okay, Bryce Young, C.J. Stroud, like, he can work with Brandon Cooks because it looks like Cooks is still a good receiver. Their chemistry's been off. Cooks looks like he's lost a step. Now it doesn't look like he's going to be here. So, yeah, hindsight will tell us that Caserio mishandled this, but if Cooks was the same this year as he was last year, I don't think this would be a conversation.
And I think if he was the same last year or this year as he was last year, too, you're not even entertaining a six-round draft pick. You might not even be entertaining a fourth-round draft pick.
No, you're right.
What's coming up on the Wheelhouse today?
Houston versus Philly. We'll compare music. We'll compare food. We'll compare movies. We'll go city by city, figure out who's better, even though we know the answer to that. And Carl Ravitch is going to be joining us at 3:30 to preview the World Series. And his real hair.
Okay. Okay.
Moriarty's, best place to eat in Philadelphia. Cheesesteak, overrated.
They got a good Panda Express up there.
Thanks to Brendan for doing all the hard work. He's Blank. I'm Branham. We'll talk to you tomorrow, Houston. The Wheelhouse is next on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.